Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who has both casual and formal golf shoes, Charlie Nance.
Hey, welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT underscore golf guy. The Northern Trust is the first leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs this week. And for the first time, I am 100% on board with the new PGA Tour schedule next year. You know, everything gets wrapped up before Labor Day. Look, I love golf. It's my favorite sport. I love to play it. I love to watch it. I love to talk about it. And all I can think about right now is the start of college football this weekend and how the Panthers are going to do this year. That being said, we do have one big event left this season, and that's the Ryder Cup. And oh, how I bleed red, white, and blue for that. And you know, I hadn't given it much thought yet, as we still have some captain's picks left to make at the end of next week, and then one more a couple of weeks after that. But I came across a great profile in National Club Golfer this week. I've retweeted it, if you haven't seen it, by the way, of Curtis Strange, our Ryder Cup captain for the 2001 that became the 2002 team following 9/11. A couple of years ago, prior to the 2016 matches, he and I had the chance to talk in depth about all that surrounded and all that was on the line in those matches. We will relive that conversation together this week. Also, on Monday, I had the chance to spend the morning at Pinehurst doing a number of things, but one was talking with Courtney Stiles, the delightful director of the First Tee program in that area, and we'll hear from her as well. But we begin today with Captain Curtis. Curtis, in my opinion, before we go anywhere else, you captained a Ryder Cup at what I consider to be emotionally and psychologically the toughest time ever. And along with Sam, and we'll get to Sam in a minute, but I don't think you've ever been given the credit you deserve. So I wanted to start out by telling you that I thought the way you and your team conducted yourself in front of the world was extremely classy in 02.
Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate those words, because we worked very hard at it. We understood the importance of the, first of all, the delay of a year after 9/11, which is what we're talking about. And it took on a whole bigger, more important and emotional meaning. It was huge. And I was, you know, I said the other day, I don't know how to put into words, but there's some part of me that is glad I was there in that position, because I felt like I got it. And what I got was the basic concept for the Ryder Cup. Sam was a dear friend. He got it. You have to remember, they were emotionally invested in this as well. Even though the tragic attack to happen in the U.S., it happened to the world, basically. And so we all got it. And I appreciated the support from fans and friends and teammates from all over.
Let's back up a little bit. 1999, the Battle of Brookline, so contentious, and I think it's safe to say it left a bad taste in the mouth of a lot of people. When the captain selection process was being made for what was going to be the 2001 Ryder Cup, was this a big topic of conversation? And I don't know if it's an interview process or whatnot, how to improve the atmosphere of the Ryder Cup?
You know, I kind of knew I was next in line. You know down deep who the next captain is going to be. There's words, there's you know, locker room chatter, water cooler chatter, whatever. I knew I was going to be put in that position. And I will tell you, not many people know, the PGA of America sent me with Julius Mason, the PR guy at PGA of America. I went to media training day in New York for an entire day. And it was fascinating. I learned an enormous amount in a matter of about 10 hours. I wish I'd have done it when I was 22 years old. And a lot of it, you know, the problem is we wouldn't have learned a damn thing at 22 years
no.
old, because we wouldn't have paid any attention. But a lot of it was predicated because of going over there and playing after Brookline and going and dealing with the European press. And I learned a great deal. I can't tell you how much I appreciated that day. Just from the standpoint, because you want to represent the PGA of America, those who came before you, your tour, yourself well, and I couldn't have done it as well as I think I did if I hadn't have gone to that media training day. So just a side note that it helped me along the way.
You know, looking back, and I think looking back is good to have perspective as far as the times, and it's amazing how people are put in places. Mark James, who was the captain of the 99 team, even on a good day was a prickly fellow. A lot of people would say that. Your ally. And another one who deserves an awful lot of credit. This is a statement that has never been made by anyone on planet Earth. God, that Sam Torrence is a jerk. Everybody loves Sam. Sam is a great guy. Speak to how important it was to have that kind of ally, that kind of person opposite of you going into the Ryder Cup.
Well, I'm in that group that loves Sam Torrence. He was, when I first went over to play the European Tour for a few weeks, in 1976, he kind of grabbed me, and we went and had a beer together and a couple of dinners. When you're all by yourself in another world, you appreciate that. You don't forget that. So Sam and I go back a long way. Sam gets it, too. He dearly wants to win. When he won the Ryder Cup against me, it was the highlight of his life, not against me, but that he was captain of the winning Ryder Cup team. But you know what? It was also a friendship there and a respect. And we, because of that, we could talk, communicate, not a lot, but enough to know what we wanted to do, was bring back some civility to the Ryder Cup, to bring back some sportsmanship, and not that it gotten completely out of hand, and no disrespect to my friend Ben Crenshaw, who was a captain the time before, but just when it's patriotic, when it's a good, strong competition, sometimes people cross the line. Yes, the players cross the line running on the 17th green, absolutely. Caddies and wives and everybody. Did the fans cross the line in Boston? Absolutely. But that happens. Let's just be aware as two civil adults that the next time, let's be aware that not to have this happen again. Let's back up just a moment. And I think we did.
2001-2002 Ryder Cup captain, the great Curtis Strange is our guest taking Dead Aim. We are 2 weeks away from the 2001 Ryder Cup, and then 9/11 happens. If memory serves, the tour was about to hold a World Golf Championship in St. Louis at Belle Reve. Where were you when you got the news? Were you in St. Louis? Were you on your way?
I was doing a corporate outing that Monday in Colorado Springs. I watched the buildings collapse in the golf shop in Colorado Springs. We actually played golf that day. What else were we going to do?
Yeah.
I got on the road the next morning, Tuesday. I was with ABC. ABC was to televise that St. Louis Golf Championship. I was going to draw a fly that night. No airplanes in the air, so my agent happened to be out there with me. We drove to St. Louis. Midway to St. Louis, they canceled the event. I continued to drive all the way to Williamsburg, Virginia. All along that 18-hour drive, I was on the phone with Tim Fincham, the commissioner, I believe it was Jim Autry, the head of the PGA of America, my players, what do we do? And they immediately took me out of the process of should we delay or should we play, because, and I'm glad they did, because I think we're all too emotional. They did what they thought was right, was delay for a year, and I absolutely agreed with it. My players were all up for doing whatever everybody thought was the right thing to do. But remember, they wanted to get home. They were all in the air, then on the ground immediately, trying to get to St. Louis. They wanted to do one thing, get home to their family, wives and children, just like I did, just like everybody else in America wanted to. So it was a very chaotic, very tough scene for everyone. None any tougher than those in Virginia and Pennsylvania and New York. So I burned up a bunch of car phone batteries, It was an important position to make, not to overplay that golf at that point was a very, very small piece of this pie in the real world on that 9/11. But in our world, what do we do? Do we travel or not? And I think we all made sense of it quickly that delay was the best thing.
Curtis, the late Pete Rozelle often said that the biggest regret he had as being NFL commissioner was going ahead and playing the NFL games the Sunday after President Kennedy's assassination. I'm sure in a quiet moment, Tim Finchem would say that that one thing may have weighed on his decision-making process. How far into it was it deemed that we're going to delay it? Was there much consideration given to actually playing the Ryder Cup?
You know, there was. They had to cover both bases. You have to remember, if we delayed, there was a lot of logistical details that had to happen in a couple of days. President's Cup had to be delayed a year because of that. Think about the grandstands. Think about the preparation at the Belfry. That was done. We were going to play in 2 weeks. Everything, corporately, sponsors, logistically, everything had to be delayed a year, and it was a big, big ordeal. But again, the right thing, the right decision was made. But, you know, we were the first. We were going to fly internationally in 2 weeks, actually 10 days. Was it safe? Was Birmingham, England safe? We didn't know. Nobody knew. Were we going to be hit again tomorrow or the next day? Nobody knew what was going to happen at this point. It was back up. Nobody knew what was happening in the world. So we didn't want to be stuck in England for a month if we got over there. I talked to an official in the government, and he told me this. And I'll never forget it. Curtis, be careful who you ask the question to, should you go or not, because if you get high enough up and they say go, you have to go. So be careful with the answer and the question. And I'll never forget that because I think down deep we all kind of don't want to sit back and be with our families.
Now, was the decision to postpone made in that car trip? I mean, somewhere between, I love the thought of the old school PGA Tour trip being in the car from Colorado Springs to Virginia.
Yeah, really.
I mean, my God.
But, no, it was made. No, I'm if I remember correctly, it was made. That was on, what was 9/11 on a Tuesday?
I think it was a Tuesday morning, yeah.
It was a Tuesday morning. I got on the road Wednesday to drive. I'm going to say Thursday or Friday we delayed. 2 to 3 days. It all happened that quickly because it had to. And they, I think on Tuesday, Wednesday midday is when they canceled the World Golf Championship at Belle Reve. And like I said, everybody was on the airplanes flying there. They were stuck all over the country. And it was a very chaotic couple of days for everyone. And like I said, in our little world. And I thought canceling the St. Louis tournament was the right thing to do. Absolutely right thing to do.
The great Curtis Strange is our guest taking Dead Aim. One of the logistical things, and I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's a small one, but it's an interesting one, is that for better or for worse, both teams had frozen rosters. And I know it's probably not seen as an advantage or disadvantage, but I always thought in the case of one of our top players, it turned out to be a huge disadvantage because David Duval, who had been on such a roll, his decline really started to gain momentum in 2002. Is that a hard thing when you're a captain and you recognize, you know, one of the guys you were going to be depending on, one of your horses, he's going downhill and somehow you've got to, you know, soothe his ego, but yet, you know, try to hide him, too. I don't know if that's the right term.
I get what you're saying. It never really entered my mind much until you started making appearances because of what we just went through. We froze the – there was talk about not freezing, but I said that wouldn't be fair. You know, these guys made the 2001 Ryder Cup team. I kept 2001 on every letterhead, every piece of clothes, on the bags. This was and still is, to me, the 2001 Ryder Cup team that happened to be played in the year 2002, just out of respect. We had one or two individuals who weren't playing as well. That's to be expected. They also had the same thing. We might have had one or two individuals who were playing better. That was to be expected, but you had to deal with it. And that was never entered my mind that, oh, my gosh, these guys aren't as good as they were. You deal with it. You go pair them accordingly. And David Duval played pretty well. I paired he and Cal Kovecki together the second afternoon together. A lot of people question that, and they whacked somebody good. And I've never been too proud of two guys in my life. So it all works out. We didn't win, but it all works out. You know, when you get delayed, and I will say this, and this is not because we lost, but when you get delayed because of an event like that, a tragic event, and you have an international team and you're the captain for 3 years instead of two, it really does become bigger than the winning and losing. It becomes representation of those who came before you and representing, you know, your people and your families and your teammates and your past captains with the most respect you possibly can. And I was so proud of my guys, the locker room, the wives, the girlfriends, the way they handled it was just fantastic. And, you know, on another note, when I see guys not representing the flag and the anthem in today's time, I really have a tough time with that because of what we went through and what that national anthem meant when we sang it, put our hands over our hearts and sang it in 2002 at the Ryder Cup. It meant more than it ever meant in any time in my life.
This is by far one of my favorite and important conversations that I've had doing this show. In part two, when we return, Captain Curtis takes dead aim at the actual matches of the 2002 Ryder Cup, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, part two of our conversation about the 2001-2002 Ryder Cup with Captain Curtis Strange. You bring up the players, the guys in the room, along with the wives and the girlfriends.
Just broad strokes, what are your memories of that team room, of being around those guys? Because when I look at your roster, it was a very interesting roster in terms of personalities. You know, we look at Tiger Woods now, he's a 40-year-old man, but Tiger was 26 years old at the time. And you had Phil, who was in his early 30s. You also had Calc, you brought him up, who was in his 40s. Hal Sutton was 44. It was a very interesting room.
You know, you say there was 12 personalities. There was actually 14 because a couple of them have two personalities. You know, and I think that's the preparing for the Ryder Cup is that is what I enjoyed more than anything else was dealing with the 12 different personalities and trying to figure out that. And I think I did a pretty decent job of that. I wouldn't babysit guys, you know, and they knew my personality. I'm not going to babysit you. You're an adult. But I guess to tell you, the team room in broad strokes was a team. We had a ball together. They want to win badly. Do they want to win as badly as the Europeans? Maybe not quite. But they have self-pride every time they get on the first take. And they want to listen. That's what shocked me more than anything else. They wanted to know the parameters in which they were to be, do, act. They listen. And I was shocked at that. From Tiger Woods to whoever might have been the pick, Scott Verplank, they wanted to know what was happening, what were the parameters of the week, and they never showed up late. They didn't show up unenthused. They were fantastic. Sarah and I often say it was the greatest week we ever had in our life, other than playing this great game. But to be involved and be the captain of these 12 guys was the greatest week of my life.
Curtis, before we get to some of the action in the matches themselves and how the Ryder Cup played out, a question I'm sure you're asked all the time, and I'm fascinated by it because he is such a reclusive guy, really, off the golf course. Behind closed doors, around his fellow golfers, around you, what is Tiger Woods like?
You know, back in the day, I haven't been around him much in recent years, but when I was doing a lot of ABC TV work, I was around him a lot. And then, of course, the Ryder Cup. He was a competitor that in the younger days, like you said, he was 26 at the time, he was normal. He wanted to be normal. Unfortunately, his celebrity status and his greatness made the surroundings abnormal, which in turn made him a little bit different over the years. And that's out of respect, I say that. That's just what happens. You know, Michael Jordan can't go to the grocery store either. Neither can Tiger Woods. I loved him. We were pretty good friends. I thought the world. I respected his ability a great deal. I thought that this kid, there's nothing stopping this kid. I saw him hit on Sunday a 3-iron at the Ryder Cup, although we have Jesper Parnevik that match. I saw him hit a 3-iron, and I thought to myself, nobody in the world could ever hit that shot, even the great Jack Nicklaus. But Jack Nicklaus is still, 20 years later, the greatest player who ever played the game, in my estimation. Careers sometimes don't pan out the way you think they might because of injury, because of kids, because of whatever might happen in your life. And it certainly did to Tiger Woods. I still respect him. I want him to come back and play well. I think it would be a wonderful story, but I just don't know if it's going to happen.
2001-2002 Ryder Cup captain, the great Curtis Strange, is our guest taking dead aim.
So we take a deep breath. We walk out for that first tee shot, the morning four ball. You don't really know how the crowd's going to react. What were the crowds at the Belfry like?
I will always be indebted to every one of those people. They showed us the respect and sportsmanship that I was hoping. You know, they're very golf knowledgeable over there. It's not just a happening and event over there. They want to watch golf, a little more so than over here. I didn't hear one coarse derogatory comment in my 3 days of matches over there. Now, certainly they said we weren't rooting for you and laughed and drank a beer. Or, you know, we had fun with each other, but there wasn't one derogatory yell from the gallery that I heard. You know, the team said there was one or two, but I said, whatever happens, you look at the grass all week, pal. Let me tell you, I don't want to hear about the derogatory comments. You're playing on their turf, in their stadium. We have to deal with it. But it was great. It was fantastic. And they rooted like hell for their own team, and which is the way it should be. But there was certainly applause and respect when we hit a good shot as well.
One thing I had forgotten until I was looking at the results of the two-day foursomes and four-ball, and knowing that when you speak on a historical level, the Americans always play great in singles. We've always seemingly, yes, That's what we do. We dominate the singles. How good did you feel being tied 8-8 going into the singles on Sunday?
Well, I felt pretty good, and people forget that. We were tied. Historically, if you're tied, you're going to win. And I think because of our depth, and maybe, just maybe, being delayed a year might have hurt that, our depth. But our depth always shines in the singles. But it also shows that they have a lot of depth as well, more so than they used to. I felt good, but I tried to scare the hell out of my team. I didn't say a whole lot to them every night. You know, I think I could be a pretty damn good coach. But anyway, I said a little 30 seconds to them or a minute every night. They didn't want to hear any BS from me. I didn't want to come off as Nuke Rodney. But I just kind of tried to tell them what we had at hand tomorrow and, you know, remind them that we're a special group of people that have a chance to do something special. And let's get it done. I came from a different perspective. I didn't want them to bond as a team, per se. I wanted them to go out and play as individuals every day because that's what we do. Certainly, if you're playing in the four-ball foursome together, human nature is going to root for your partner to play his butt off. You're going to be a team player there. But I wanted you to get over that ball and act like this was the last shot you were ever going to hit in a major. And I still believe that. They come together as a team. Are you kidding me? You got a flag you're playing for. So anyway, I felt pretty good, but it just didn't happen. We just didn't play well, and they played a little better.
The 2001-2002 United States Ryder Cup captain, Curtis Strange, our guest taking dead aim.
One of the things that I wish would change about the Ryder Cup, of all the changes they've implemented, and it's one of the few things I really like about the President's Cup. I like how one captain lays down a player or a team, and then the other captain lays it down. That's not how it works in the Ryder Cup. You sort of have to make a decision if you're going to front load or back load. And it looked like, based on what I'm seeing here, that Sam chose to front load and you chose to back load, and it didn't work out for us.
Yeah, let me first talk about, I do enjoy that too, but I think also the Ryder Cup, the way I put down 1 through 12 and they put down 1 through 12 in the singles and we match up is a decent way to do it too. I do like challenging other players, but I think you might get into being pressured into putting Tiger and Rory against each other for TV purposes, and I don't want to do that. I want to do what's best for the team, not for TV. With that said, I understand it's entertainment. I chose to backload. Nobody's ever really asked me. They wanted to criticize me, but nobody wanted to say, why did you actually do that? And very few people have ever asked me. I thought it was going to be close. And I wanted my strength at the end. Now, I could have gone the opposite. I had some reporter say, when you play in their stadium, you want to shut the crowd out early. Good point. I didn't really think about that. My thought process, well, I think this is going to be close tomorrow. We're playing in their stadium. I want strength when it's close at the end. And Tiger Woods was last and Phil was second to last. Now, I would be an absolute dumbass to say I would do it exactly the same way because we lost. I would try something different because we lost. I might have put Tiger in the middle. But whatever the case is, I have to live with it. And you know what? I took some of the criticism a little bit personally, especially from those who'd never played in a Ryder Cup, because I'm only doing what's best for my team. This is not about me. If my name was never mentioned that week, that would have been the perfect week for me. I wanted my team to win, and I wanted them to give them the best opportunity. Bottom line, nobody gives a rat's ass who plays 1 through 12. Just go play well and make me look good. That's all. And that's what I was hoping, and it didn't happen.
Curtis, you mentioned early on, and I'm in complete agreement with you, that the 2001-2002 Ryder Cup became about so much more than the matches. Yep. or about golf. And I really thought on the final day,
the embrace between you and Sam on that 18th green or just off the 18th green is something I really can't get out of my mind.
Well, you get me emotional thinking about what happened on the last green there that day. When you put your heart and soul into something for 3 years and it's over, it's a feeling like, well, I hope everybody in this world can experience something like that. It's a grand experience that it came off. We pulled this off, Sam and I. And Sam and I hugged unlike any hug I've ever had in my life. I congratulated him. I was happy for him. It meant a great deal to him and his daddy, Bob, who's since passed. We actually, later on, Sam and I instituted, we used to have a victory party for both teams. That was canceled some Ryder Cups before ours. We put it back in play because I think the team should get together on Sunday night. But we just had a big cocktail party and hors d'oeuvres. You can stay 5 minutes or 5 hours, but you will attend. Everybody stayed an hour, hour and a half. It was fantastic. You know, we sang together. We hugged each other and no speeches. Just thinking about what happened a year before. Just kind of culminates into a five-minute ordeal on the last screen that's very, very special for everyone.
Get you out of here on this. The 2001-2002 United States Ryder Cup captain, Curtis Strange, is our guest taking dead aim.
We're heading into another Ryder Cup. I think we look great on paper. You'd make a hell of a coach. If you're looking at this Ryder Cup team, you think we got a good shot this year?
I think we have a good shot every year. Are you kidding me? On paper, it always – and I don't mean that. I have the utmost respect for those guys over there. They have more to prove. They're going up against a big, bad USA. It's good for their tour. It's good for them personally, all of the above. But on paper, you can't argue the fact that we're always the favorite. You know, world golf rankings, individual tournament wins, major wins. It doesn't make any difference how you slice it. But they have proven to be very tough in match play, very gutsy, heartfelt players. And you have to really commend them. That's all you can do is say congratulations. This year, I think we're very strong. You know, every year they talk about transition. We always go through a transition. But we are going through a good transition as well. I want, and I mean this with the utmost respect, I want 12 Patrick Reeds and J.B. Holmes on my team. I want 12 tough guys.
That's what I've been saying for ever since Reed was in Scotland last time. Yeah. Give me clone this guy 11 times over and give me that team.
Are you kidding me? You know, you're always going to bet against the country little league team, against the not inner city, but the well-to-do city suburb
yeah.
little league team. I'm betting on the guys have more to prove every time, and that's what it comes down to. But I got to tell you, it's a wonderful week. I will be there. Can't wait just to watch, support. And it's a fantastic week every year and a half, and we always look forward to it. You know, it's a week where there's a winner and a loser. Every match, there's the emotions. It's okay to run your emotions high as long as they keep them in check, and the fans like to see that. And it's a great TV event for those to watch.
He's one of my favorite people in the game for a lot of reasons. Top of the list, though, how he and his team represented our country in the 2002 Ryder Cup. He's Captain Curtis Strange. And up next, to the Sand Hills we go, and that area's director, Courtney Stiles, takes dead aim at her first tea chapter, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Hey, we're taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Spent Monday morning at Pinehurst doing a couple of projects and had the opportunity to sit down with that area's first tea director, Courtney Stiles. We're here with Courtney Stiles, the executive director of the First Tea Program down here in the Sandhills. And as we're talking, we are looking out the beautiful landscape that is Pinehurst over Thistledew, the putting course, and the Cradle, the new short course here at Pinehurst. And, you know, I was talking with Matt Janella of the Golf Channel not too long ago. And when talking about Pinehurst, he noticed that I was using possessive pronouns, our, we, and he called me out on it. And I thought about it a long time, and I said, well, you know, I said, what's different about Pinehurst as opposed to every place else is they open their doors to the kids and to the juniors. And I have been down here with my son caddying for years when he was playing, U.S. kids events. And now he plays high school series events up here. And I've come down here playing. And with the addition of Thistledew and with the Cradle, more than ever, what I think sets Pinehurst apart is it opens up. It makes us feel possessive of it because it allows us to be a part of it. It's not just a resort.
No, you're completely right. We are so lucky at the First Tee because we use 14 different facilities to run programs, and Pinehurst opens their doors to us every week. We have programs at Pinehurst number 6. We use number 7 and 8 frequently, as well as 9 for summer camps. They let us come out here, and we bring kids around Thistledew for the last week to just celebrate the end of programs. We had volunteers on the Cradle last week with kids that had never been out here before. They go above and beyond to help us host events. We had a young lady that was selected for Pebble Beach back in July, and Pinehurst let us use their facility to watch the Golf Channel Morning Drive live to see if she was picked, so we had a big party over there. But Pinehurst never closes their doors, especially on kids.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things I've always found most stunning, having been around a lot of golf resorts over the years. And, you know, they have a tendency to be adults only, and that's how they like to do business, and God bless them. But it's not just that they open their doors. It's that if you question it, like, are you really going to let us do this? Pinehurst looks at you like, well, why wouldn't we? It's one thing to say that you're working towards growing the game. It's another. This is all they're about.
Yes, absolutely. It is really fun to come out here after dinner because you see a huge diversity of folks just hanging out on the patio and putting and chipping together, and it's really a place where community comes together.
Courtney Stiles is the executive director of the First Tee program down here in the Sandhills. She's our guest taking Dead Aim. You brought up Thistledew, and it's hard to really describe it unless you're looking at it, but it's an enormous putting course, and no one is ever going to be successful doing it. I think that's part of its charm, is it's just fun. And the cradle I've described many times as the most fun you're ever going to have at 700 yards for nine holes. It is just fun. And one of the things that golf is sort of lacking or falls down in, and you hear things like, you know, it's a hard game. And so we've got to make it fun for people starting out. And you being a part of the First Tee, of course, it's all about fun and showing how fun the game could be. But things like a putting course and a short course, these are just ideal for that.
No, absolutely. I mean, at the First Tee, we start programs at 5 with like bright neon colored equipment and big sticky targets. And we don't even go to a golf course. We run around on a field and we yell and we have a good time. And when we come out here to Thistledew, the kids play on little teams and play captain's choice. And it's fun because every day you show up and they've moved the tees. So the Thistledew course doesn't even play the same every day. It's always unique. You can putt a ball 50 feet from the hole and watch it roll sideways towards the hole. It really shows the kids that they can have fun and get better at golf, not just like stand on a driving range and hit and hit and hit.
You brought up something. You said you start them out at age 5 and you don't even go to the golf course, and it made me smile because I remember when my son was coming along, he saw me going off to the golf course, and after a while he said, well, what are you doing? And you know, that's when we got him started and got him just some lessons and hitting on the range. And for 2 summers, that's all he wanted to do was hit on the range. And he finally got to the point where I needed to get him out to the golf course. And I think the size of it, the enormity of a golf course, is daunting to a little person, and that's why I wanted to bring up the cradle again. It's almost when you look at the cradle, it's an homage to what they've done with Pinehurst number 2 and Pinehurst number 4 now, in the way you have the natural grasses and the sands and whatnot. And so it's one of those in miniature, or in other words, when they come out and look at it, it's, oh, this one's my size.
No, you're right. So there's a couple things about the cradle. One, kids love it because it's easy to walk. I have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old, and they love to come out to the cradle. We can get around in an hour. They can hit all of the clubs in their bag. They don't feel overwhelmed. But at the same time, us adults know that even though there's not a shot longer than 110 yards, that it's still very difficult. There's undulating greens and deep bunkers. But when the kids see it, they see it as achievable. They're not watching their parents tee off on a 400-yard par 4 and then waiting to get to the 100-yard marker to play their abbreviated hole. They're getting to hit from the same place as us. So they love it. It's something we do a lot at night.
And it's not hard for the young ones to get around. I brought my 70-year-old father out here, and he had no trouble getting around either. And he has trouble getting around the house. So, you know, it's great for people of all ages. Courtney Stiles is the executive director of the First Tee of the Sandhills. She's our guest taking Dead Aim. Talk to me about your programs. We're about to start school again. What all do you have going on?
Yeah, so we had a really busy summer. We're actually finishing our last week of STEM camp this week. It's a program that runs every morning, and our fall programs will start the week of Labor Day. We will be at about 14 different golf courses. Our chapter is actually a very regional chapter because we're in a very rural market. So we do programs all over Moore County, programs in Cumberland County. We're about to take on 3 new counties where we'll start expanding our school day programs. So we're really excited to get going for the fall and see where it takes us.
And how could people sign up or register for you?
So our website is thefirsttsandhills.org. You can also look us up on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. But registration is open, and we have a no child turned away policy. So we always have scholarships available for both programs as well as equipment for kids.
She's the director of the First Tee of the Sandhills area. That's Courtney Stiles. Also, I hope you enjoyed a look back at my conversation with Curtis Strange about being Ryder Cup captain in that pivotal 2002 match post-9/11. It's always a privilege to talk to Curtis. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered today, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. On the page right now, several links to a bunch of great golf stories, including one about, I think it's a cockamamie idea for Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson to be putting this money match on pay-per-view. Guys, this is not a good look. Weather-wise, pretty good weekend to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt our souls and break our hearts. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.